Welcome and hello to the 105th episode of the GAK Guitar Shop Podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, who is joining me today.
Hello, my name's Jay. I'm the assistant manager here in the guitar shop.
Hello, my name's Matt and I am the manager in the guitar shop.
Hello, gentlemen.
I've got to be honest, you starting with welcome and hello.
I flipped it.
It made me feel so at home, so comfortable.
I
think that's really nice.
What, flipping it round?
Saying welcome and hello rather than hello and welcome.
Oh, okay.
Welcome and hello. You're welcoming me. Your priority isn't like, yeah, hello, I've acknowledged you. It's coming to my home.
No, I'll stick with it.
Welcome and hello. I like it. I think that's really nice.
Anyway, how are you this week, gentlemen? How has the shop been?
Good. Busy. We've had visits from people with shiny guitars.
Oh, yeah? Who visited?
I spent some time this week with the Fender Custom Shop rep. One of my favourite things to do ever is pick guitars.
Which is quite good considering our subject this evening, which we'll come on to later. But yeah, okay, cool. So you spent some time with him. What did you do?
Well, we'll talk about it later, but I picked some nice guitars.
Oh, right, sweet.
I think so. And spent some time specking up some bits, thinking about... In fact, I think I might put it on the group. We need to spec up some more custom shops.
And get some suggestions in that.
We sort of cycle through this every time Jake comes to visit, don't we? Like, are we going to...
I don't like that. Yeah, I love that because I love it. And then, you know, you run the risk of just having a shelf full of guitars that you're never going to sell.
But that's it.
But I could quite happily buy.
I mean, we are very lucky that Christopher Franks is in charge of bass custom shop choices and not myself.
I don't know.
Burgundy mess.
Like, what should we do? And I'm like... Pink over... I was talking about things about doing pink over gold sparkle today.
Yeah, the only things you'd ever order would be shell pink or gold sparkle.
I reckon
and Aztec gold.
I reckon a 59P bass in shell pink with matching headstock would look...
Anything looks good with matching headstock. I was looking at...
What about unmatching headstocks? Why don't they do that? Shell pink with a Daphne blue headstock.
They do custom shops where it's a finish over a finish. Why don't they do like half refinishes?
They also do that on the headstock.
I did notice, yeah, we've got a 59 precision bass in, which I think is it's Olympic white over Fiesta red. I think it's Fiesta red. I couldn't tell you exactly what the colour is on the underside. But the decal is not been finished over, as if someone couldn't be bothered to remove the decal and buy a new one. So they've left it all out. So in between all the F's E and everything is the original colour, which I thought was quite an interesting...
It's a nice touch.
Nice little touch there by Fender. Making something incredibly expensive that looks incredibly cheap.
Colour over colour is just such an awesome thing to do, but it's like,
it is
what
a great
colour
idea.
Over?
I'm
well,
not, I'm
you
not
always
that into
have
it.
Sunburst as the undercolour.
Not always.
No, I disagree.
Oh, that's cool.
One of the guys at Fender has candy apple red over three colour sunburst. So the guitar has got like seven layers of colour. So you've got the yellow, the red. Well, you've got the white primer, then the yellow, then the red, then the black, then the new white primer, then the gold undercoat, then the translucent candy.
That's
and then
ridiculous.
All relic back.
Amazing. I bet that looks like an onion.
An onion of colour.
Yeah.
A colour onion. Mm,
exactly. So anyway, how have other things in the shop been? Secondhand stuff, how's that doing?
Yeah, good. We've been getting
a lot of cool things. We've got a few things coming through.
American, early 2000s American double fat Strat. I used to have the HSS Strat version of that, and that's perloid plate. With a pearly gate and a 59, like a two humbucker like machine. It's just so nice, but it plays like a really nice Strat.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Wicked. We've had a few cool custom shop things come in as well, I know. Speaking of those finish over finish things, have we not? A couple of interesting Strats.
Yeah, we had a few months ago we had the Dennis Kalushka Tele. What else have we had?
There's a Strat with a gold undercoat, is there not?
Oh, that's not secondhand, though.
Oh, no, sorry, it's not. No,
no,
I know
he moved
that
on to custom shop.
Yeah, I was just...
Oh, right, sorry.
I just meant other things that were in.
We got black over Aztec gold.
That's cool.
Reminds me of, like...
It's like what? Batman, isn't it? You've got, like, Bruce Wayne.
Black over graffiti yellow!
Whoa.
I mean, that might look cool. Black. I reckon.
I mean,
I reckon,
it'd be like.
I reckon you're missing. I reckon what you should do is have a black undercoat that's refinished black.
Right.
I know, I'm black over graffiti yellow because it could be like someone bought a graffiti yellow guitar in like 69 and went, God! Better finish this in black.
Woke up from their acid haze in 1974 and went,
actually, that couldn't happen because graffiti yellow didn't
graffiti
come in.
Graffiti yellow was a 70s colour.
70s colour, yeah.
Was part it?
Of the, well, yeah, it was part of the international colour series.
Oh,
graffiti
yes.
yellow. Maui Blue, Antigua Burst, and I can't remember the last one.
Something else, yeah.
We were talking about Egg Burst today. I think.
Yeah, white... the idea, your idea of an Egg Burst guitar is ridiculous.
Yellow with a white edge, Egg Burst.
Speaking of
Egg Burst.
Egg Burst. Speaking of weird finishes, I have, for as long as I can remember, had the argument with Christa Franks that. When in the early 70s, when Fender essentially reissued the original shape precision bass with a single coil, and they called it the Telecaster bass or the Tele bass, when they originally reissued it, that they did a series of them in Sherwood Green, and Twister was saying no because that color wasn't around then.
Yeah,
they didn't do it, and I was like, they definitely did because I've got a picture of one in the Fender bass book, and it's true. I even checked. I found the book the other day because I'm moving house. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to find that picture. And I'm going to show Chris and show him that there is a Sherwood Green Tele bass. And then I read the disclaimer next to the image, which explained that at that time, Fender bought a load of really cheap...
car primers, I mean.
Yeah, and those were all the Lake Placid Blue basses. They all went green.
Really?
Yeah, so they all looked Sherwood Green, but they were
Lake
Placid
Blue. That's really interesting.
Yeah,
there you go. John Entwistle have something to do with bringing in a green or bringing in a different finish? I'm sure he would. He was like, I don't want it in that colour. I want this colour. And then we don't do it.
He did a really... In 1966, he made a completely slab-bodied precision bass with Fender. So it was... The original no tummy cut, no contours or anything like that shape that you got on the 51, but still with the modern 57 onwards scratch plate and the modern split humbucking pickup and modern neck as well, which looked cool. And they only did that in vintage white.
Well, I always like the Gibson did a limited run of Hot Mod 55s.
Oh, that was such a
that
cool
was probably
guitar.
That was probably one of the best, I think, one of my favourite Les Pauls ever that we've had here. And that was basically because obviously they only started doing burst finishes in 58, but people who had bought Les Pauls before and they'd had ebony or gold, they were still using the same maple caps. They weren't necessarily placing them in the centre though. So what people were doing was like, oh, but I want a burst Les Paul. So they sent their 56 gold top with two humbuckers to whatever, 57 rather, to Gibson, and then drilled in two humbuckers and then stripped the finish and gave it a burst, because they were effectively covering it in a block colour, so it didn't matter where the join was. So you get some there, the join was like halfway across. But that looked cool.
I thought it looked cool. We had one for ages, and we didn't sell it because, we sold it eventually, but we didn't sell it for a long time because it wasn't book matched in the middle. And I thought it looked cool. I thought it added tons of character to the guitar. I thought it looked absolutely incredible.
They were awesome.
That was a really cool series.
Well, gentlemen, this line of conversation actually brings us very, very neatly onto our topic for this evening, which is
Gear of Our Wildest Dreams.
There you go. So, basically, again, this was something suggested on the podcast group, was just for us to talk a bit like what the gear of our wildest dreams would be, a kind of unashamedly high-end...
Super indulgent.
Yeah, super indulgent. What would we have if money was no object? So I thought maybe we could broaden that a little bit. Certainly, let's talk about some of our favourite things. Certainly when it comes to stuff like amps, but on the guitar front, maybe we should talk a bit about the two major custom shops that we deal with, Fender and Gibson, and the things that are available.
MXR and actually, Full Tone.
Actually, it's also worth mentioning, I know we didn't mention this when we were chatting just before the podcast, but also, quick, brief mention, in terms of, because they're through Fender, Jackson Custom Shop.
That's true.
And I've actually done quite a few custom orders within the last sort of 3 or 4 months of people who have had custom order Jacksons. And, you know, if you're not a Fender or you're not Strat Teddy or Les Paul, or SG, you can have, you know, some sort of crazy super Strat as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yes, we should certainly talk about those. But yes, at a kind of at an extremely self-indulgent level of high-endness, I guess custom shop is where you look. So, let's take Fender first as maybe the more slightly more prolific of the two, and as far as custom shops are concerned. And let's talk about how you can go about getting a custom shop and what sort of options.
You can definitely email me, matt.knight@ga. Don't contact Jay, because he, you know, he just wants a Baja. He can buy them already. Although we haven't, actually, maybe we should do that.
You're so salesy.
Why don't we do that?
Get a custom.
Don't look at me as if I think it might be a bad idea. Of course you should do that. I'm bored of no casters coming through with modern necks. I want a U-neck. I'll probably buy it.
Dear custom shop, please make me the fattest neck possible.
Yeah.
In fact, just
can
stick
you,
a plank
can
of
you,
wood on
like,
it.
You know how like Fender necks are, the headstock is at one end and then the bit that goes into the neck pocket is the other end. Can you not shave it down? Can you just leave it like the bit that goes into the neck pocket? I want it that size. It can be square if you want. I'll figure it out. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Just round it off through playing. Well, I mean, yeah, basically, it's just a case of what do you want? Like, I mean, within reason. Well, actually, I say within reason. If you really want to go extreme, they will do it. And obviously, the more extreme you go,
longer the wait.
The longer, well, the longer the cost.
There are
the longer, the more the cost. The longer the cost.
There are limitations, though, because I seem to remember someone. It was not long after I started. Someone came into the shop who was a big Man City fan. And they wanted a custom shop bass. I'm sure it was bass.
It was West Ham.
Was it West Ham?
It was West Ham.
So they wanted the
Steve Harris bass.
Well, no, I mean there is now. Well, I don't. Was that a production
there is,
line?
No,
one?
No,
it was
a custom shop.
It was a custom shop.
There is a production line in Lake Placid Blue, which is a bound slab body.
Yeah,
P-bass,
but they did it with they
but
did
they
it
did
in
a
white,
custom shop
they?
In white with the West Ham logo.
Yeah,
on it.
But I'm not because I think there was a, I think someone came in who wanted a Man City one with the Man City badge on the guitar. And they couldn't. Fender couldn't get the license.
Because I seem to also remember that he wanted his own signature on the headstock as well.
Yeah, and they wouldn't do that either. Yeah.
So I mean, that. I mean, to be honest, I say there's no limitations.
It's fine.
You say there's no limitations. I'm sure,
that's pretty extreme.
I'm sure if you went to the Fender shop, custom shop, and put a briefcase of $100,000 on the table and just went, go on then. They'd be like, all right, yeah, sure, why not?
You feel me and Les Paul.
But there's no limitations in that you could approach Fender Custom Shop for a Jagstang if you want.
Yeah.
You could do. I mean, basically, if you go... So, effectively, if you go outside of their standard production body shapes, it will be master built. So the right, if you went, cool, well, I want a Rascal bass, but I want to put 3 humbuckers in
could
it.
Could you explain master built for people?
So yeah, basically, so you've got team build. I don't know how many people work for the actual overall team, the custom shop factory. So you've got the team build, which is built by everyone. And then you've got master build. So you've got 8 master builders.
Is it only 8 now? I thought it was more than that. I thought it was like 14.
No, it's 8 master builders. And I can't remember if that includes or excludes Stephen Stern, who does all the Gretsch. But anyways, there's 8 master builders. And you can have a master build instrument where you pick your master builder and it will be built by him from start to finish. And you can have whatever and you know, there are in a sense no limits.
So what would be the limitations on a team build? So a team build has to be something that they choose in their custom shop catalogue for each year.
Yeah. There are like specific variables.
One-piece body, for example. You can't have a one-piece body team built. If it's one piece, so they someone goes out and picks a slab of ash and you're going to have a one piece telly, it needs to be master built.
Right. I understand. But does it, in the team builds, because every year Fender publish what their custom shop models are for
I mean, they do like a small run catalogue, but pretty much everything you see is custom ordered by us or by the Fender rep. You know, it's kind of, you know, you're basically, you're saying like, what year body do you want? What year neck do you want? What, or, you know, what year kind of Strat or Tele do you want? And then how do you want to customize it, I suppose, is the main way to look at it.
Yeah. And more recently, we've had more of a role with Fender in choosing things. Jay, why don't you explain a bit about that, about how we've got involved in making things?
In what sense? What the? I mean, we will just, Matt and Steph, who's one of the other guys who does our Fender purchasing, will sit down and they will put together a list of things that you think people will enjoy, things that people think...
Not just the things that I will enjoy.
But they are essentially, I mean, chosen by us and designed by us.
Yeah, I mean, that's... I think that's one of the cool parts of the job, really, is kind of going, wow, what would... It's almost not... Sometimes you've got to think, not necessarily what would you want to see, but what would kind of be cool. What would be different? Because it'd be so easy to back up 5, 56 Strats in standard colours.
But that's the advantage of the way Fender work with their custom shop, because it allows us to design bases specifically for our microclimate of business here in Brighton, rather than sort of the general custom shop models that Fender, of course, decide from their mini catalogue every year. And those are the bases that they're making. We choose completely different things.
I mean, you know, they certainly do things in their catalogue, like the new Journeyman series that they've done, which is a new design from the new head of the custom shop, which has got a new style lacquer finish.
Oh, yeah?
Which is a process that's designed for it to look slightly aged, a bit like Closet Classic.
Is that what that telly is that we got in?
Yeah, we've got a Strat as well.
It's kind of like cracked and a little bit more yellow, but it's got much more modern features in it. It's like
sort of halfway between like Relict and Closet Classic, isn't
it? Yeah, but it's a new lacquer that they're using.
What's this, not nitro or poly?
I think it's some form of nitro.
I think it's halfway between NOS and Closet Classic rather than Relict.
Right, yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
Yeah, it's... The guy that Jake, our rep, was explaining it, but it's a new... Yeah, I think it's still nitro, but it's a new technique or a new type of nitro or something that they're using.
It's really interesting.
But yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, where do you start? Where do you want a Strat or a Tele? You know, what sort of neck profile do you want? And most people, when you get down to nitty-gritty things like fret wire, people are like... Because it's not a question you ask when you
6131. That's what you want. 6131 in nickel.
Is that like super tall and...
Yeah, tall and slim. That's what you want.
See, most people really want...
Really fat.
Bass player, mate. Tall and slim.
Really fat frets.
Like really tall, really fat, really wide.
Just vintage. Vintage style.
Bigger than that.
6131 was vintage.
I want two sets of frets topped on top of each other.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
In fact... There we go.
You've got the Matt's just pulled, again, great radio. Out a picture that shows the different...
Oh, I meant 6105.
Fret wire.
I wasn't even right.
Yeah, 6105 is the vintage style fret.
Yeah, that's the one that...
That's what you want.
That's what everyone has.
That's what you want.
Yeah, I like 6105s.
But yeah, I mean, you know, what would you want to see if you could spec one out? Like,
well, go on then. Let's go around the room. Your definitive custom shop.
I still like mine changes every day, but I still like the idea of Shell Pink over Gold Sparkle.
Egg burst. You should put your money where your mouth is. Do an egg burst.
No, I want to spec the egg burst, but I don't want to play the egg burst.
On what?
But could
what
you have like? But then could you have like a maple neck that looks like a bit like a bit of like a soldier, like a dippy for like a dippy egg? Could you then
omelet burst? Omelet burst is just
pizza
like,
burst.
Ugh. Pizza burst. We definitely sell that.
So like a crusty yellow
going into a mulchy red in the middle. Nice, I like it. So what would you have it on?
I really, really want, again, because I did order one here and it sold straight away, a Shell Pink Esquire with a torque guard.
With a torque guard? With a torque guard
on Shell Pink.
Mint on Shell Pink.
No.
It looked really good.
And then with the world's fattest neck.
Rosewood or maple?
Maple. One
didn't you not buy that because you just bought that 72 2
no,
Telecaster.
No, that pink guitar came up in my time hop from 3 or 4 years ago now.
Is it that long ago?
Yeah.
Jeez Louise.
What about you, Jay Cross? What do you have from the Fender Custom Shop?
I mean, I'm really boring though, aren't I?
Like, are you actually gonna have a custom shop Baja?
Not a Baja, because. But I would, I'm Telecaster, and I think I would go Telecaster rather than Esquire. I realize.
Well, they're all white. If you want
an
Esquire,
I know they're all routed for Telecaster. So even the Esquires that are only single pickup do have the routing for the neck pickup.
Yeah.
I think I would go Telecaster because I've actually been like when I've been playing recently, I've been using the neck pickup quite a lot.
Wow.
I'm a bit of a
you're mellowing in your old age.
It's really weird. I have been like, oh, this sounds really nice. Not just like, yeah, it sounds wicked. It's like, oh, this sounds nice. I like it.
You see, guys, you've both gone for things that essentially you
exist.
Can get.
Yeah, this
is the problem. I would use the custom shop to achieve something that I can't.
I sort of have with the we've got a master built that's on the way, which is like a black over shell pink HSS with a zebra humbucker in it. Because I was like, oh, yeah, how do you know that?
That's a bit bare. I mean, I'd be torn on a custom shop between. I'd either go for a 1961 reissue jazz bass, so with concentric controls, which you cannot get. You can't get those. They're all in museums or played by Guy Pratt. They don't exist. There was too short a run of concentrics before it switched over to the standard controls, so impossible to get. Or I go for a 51 P bass, which of course are all in museums.
Yeah,
that those that have survived, not no one is playing a real 51. So,
how many were there? Do you know?
I don't know actually.
Was it like a very, very, very short amount? Like,
well, I mean, technically the bass stayed the same for 3 years, 4 years before they.
How many are we thinking then? Like, I've got no
well,
like, that, like 1,000 or like 5,000?
Probably be more than that, I would
I
have
don't,
thought.
No, they reckon there
I
was
really
like 1,000, 58, 59, 60.
That's,
no,
yeah, that's
like that.
That's the thing. That's what I was sort of anchoring myself
because they were probably
on.
Only building like.
Yeah, I guess they weren't building. And even at that time.
I mean,
like,
the Fenders were obviously easier to build because they were modular.
But still, when you've got to think, when the 51 Precision bass came out, there was no such thing as a bass player, like an electric bass player in a band.
How did they market it? Like, how did they...
Oh, you should see some of
them.
Actually,
who bought them
in the Fender bass book I've got, they marketed them in exactly the same way as Messer market the 25-watt thing. What's it called?
The Mark V.
The Mark V, thank you. Exactly the same way as they do that, or Mark Bass market their Big Bang in a tiny little box. They marketed it, putting a picture of a guy struggling to
carry
a double bass. And then they were like, well, you can get one of these.
They must have been expensive, though, and you must have had to be, in a way, pretty mental to go out and think, I'm going to buy this completely new thing that's never existed before and then play on it.
That is true, but it wasn't a new idea because, of course, the Telecaster was a bass guitar.
Well, yeah, of
as
course,
well,
yeah,
by
suppose.
Having
yeah.
by the introduction of the neck pickup, which was designed for people to play bass on. So this was just taking that on a touch further, which is why the Precision bass is built so much in the Telecaster's image, the original 51. Mm. That is with a very similar scratch plate control panel.
Yeah.
And headstock and everything else. It was just a progression of that.
Yeah, I wonder how many there are.
Who knows? But if you've got one, please let me have a look at it.
Can we see a picture?
So guys, so what about like the other side of things? So Gibson Custom Shop, how does that?
It's kind of open because it wasn't there before, really.
No.
And it's not. They're not calling it a custom shop. They're calling it made to measure, which is.
Which is something I associate with wardrobes.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. You get the Les Paul in the wardrobe.
They string up the wardrobe and then you cut it out yourself. Just to make it easy to transport.
That's good. Modular. I like it.
It's basically, rather than having a custom shop so you can't go like, oh, yeah, make me, I don't know, some like colour over colour or, you know, whatever. They're kind of going, well, look, here are all the options that we can give you. Piece together all those options and we'll make it for you. And we happen to have a made-to-measure catalogue here. And
which actually we're having we're doing the made to measure catalogue uploaded onto our website.
This is all new. Well, I think we've only done one made to measure guitar so far, haven't we?
Was that the blue one that you
did? That was a cool, like, it wasn't just something like really standard. That was a quilt top blue burst Les Paul custom.
What?
Yeah. With nickel hardware. It was. They put that up on the Facebook, their Facebook group, and it got something like 40,000 likes and like 10,000 shares or something ridiculous. It was just, and the guy just opened the case and was like, "That's exactly what I wanted. That's amazing." But I mean, they've got like a, you can basically, so you can have a 59 or a 60, or you can have a 54, 56, 57, 55. Don't ask me why there's no 55.
You just said 55.
I mean 58 at the end, sorry. 54, 56.
There's no 58. Yeah, there is a 58.
No,
there.
There's no 55.
Oh, yeah, that's weird, isn't it?
54, 56, 57, 58. If anyone can answer why there's no 55, I don't
Was it? I mean.
So,
I
can you only get Les Pauls?
No, you can get SGs as well.
But is that it?
There's no basses.
So you can't. There are no basses. So, you can't get any. You can't
I
get
want a Madone.
Any of the you can't get Explorers, you can't get Flying V's.
No, so there's basically four.
That one that looked like a can opener.
The Modern.
Yeah.
There's the
one that was supposed to look like a Falcon that Packham talks about.
Oh, what in. Yeah, okay. Right.
Yeah, you've got 59 or 60 as one option, 54, 56, 57, 58 as a second bunch of options, SG Standards or Les Paul Customs.
No bases.
I'd
get a 69 EBO.
Well, you can't.
That is true.
So, I mean, yeah, you can have right, left-handed, four different types of aging, four different types of hardware, three different types of neck.
And so we've only actually done one, so this is actually even quite new to you guys.
Yeah. Three different types of body, regular, ultralight or chambered. Two different types of top.
You know the glaring omission from this catalogue, though, don't you?
Like the Baja Telly.
No. The glaring omission from this catalogue.
The Gibson Jimi Hendrix Strat.
The No Les Paul Juniors.
No. Well, could you? No, you can't. Because I did ask, I think at the time, you can't spec one pickup. It should automatically.
So, whoa. So the Gibson Custom Shop is limited to getting guitars that exist.
That's why it's not really a custom shop. That's why it's more made to measure. It's more like, right, you want a 59. Or you, all right. Oh, yeah, look. Who wants a 58, 59 or 60? I want a 56. And then you can kind of go, but I want it ultra light.
Yeah, I guess the benefit to it is you can say, well, look, I really like 56. I really like the 56. I really like a P9. I'd really like a P90. Les Paul, but I don't want a gold top. I want it to look like a Les Paul, and that's where this comes in.
Are the finishing options quite broad?
On the Les Paul custom, they are a bit more broad.
On the R series, they're pretty broad as well, aren't they? You can get a bunch of different finishes.
Yeah,
I mean, most of them are bursts.
But I mean, for example, at Fender Custom Shop, I could literally ask for any color. I can send them a sample.
I mean, that goes to Masterbuilt, but you can send them a color sample,
right?
And do that.
And you can't do that with this.
No. But you could have it in. Wow, man. You could have like a 56 Les Paul in washed cherry or like TV yellow.
What was their burgundy mist colour?
Heather poly.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want a 56
Kerry
in heather
green,
poly.
Gold mist. Candy apple red. We've actually got 57 in candy apple red here, which is amazing.
Very interesting as well, candy apple red, because that I think we had this conversation at some
it
point.
It looks
last
totally
year.
Different from Gibson.
It looks totally different. It looks very strange because that's what you would expect as like a tradition. It's a Fender type color.
Yeah, it looks like cardinal red. I can't tell the difference between the Gibson cardinal red and the Gibson.
You can have
apple.
SGs in sparkle finishes.
Can you?
What?
Oh, can you get the Les Pauls? Can you get the customs in sparkle finishes as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, but not the R series.
No.
That's pretty good. I guess it's the only avenue that Gibson provide for you to get anything.
Exactly what you want.
Yeah, exactly what you want. But you can't go nuts like you can with a Fender Custom Shop.
No. I think I can see why, because I think if they opened up a custom shop, I think straight away they'd have so many orders they just wouldn't be able to cope. And I don't think what they're trying to do is tie it into the rest of the custom factory where Custom Shop have got their own completely separate division that does all of the builds, where I think those are built in line with all of the other customs that they do, you know, all of the other just standard.
The infrastructure isn't in place is the long and the short of it, but that doesn't stop me pining after a Les Paul Junior, Custom Shop Les Paul Junior. I spoke to a guy earlier this week who I'd had a really stressful day, and I was really tired at the end of the day, and a guy came in and I think he just asked for directions to like a point in town, and I was really tired, and I was like, yeah, it's just, yeah, I was trying my hardest to be really like polite, but I was very disinterested in like where he wanted to go. It was like he wanted to know where the town hall was or something like that, and I was like, oh yeah, it's just like you go down and round the corner. He's like, oh yeah, cool, thanks, yeah, I just sort of pop in, like, oh yeah, I've got quite a few guitars. I was like, oh yeah, cool man, what have you got? And he was like, I've got this Custom Shop Les Paul Junior. And I was like, what, hang on a sec, you've got what? Oh, cool, man. And then we had a little talk, and then it burnt me right up. And then he walked off to the town hall. But yeah, it was great. Oh, man. I don't understand why they don't do it. It's such a great guitar.
Yeah, I don't understand why they don't do any basses. I mean, I guess Gibson basses are on a more limited market, but certainly the EBO is like a slice of bass history. And I know you can get SG basses, but I don't
know. What's the difference?
The SG bass has got tons more controls, and you've got a pickup on the bridge as well. You've got a side.
The EBO is just a big fat humbucker.
Yeah,
in the neck.
That, yeah, just.
Well, somewhere between the neck and the middle.
In the 70s, they put it in the middle, but the proper EBOs are the late 60s ones, which were just a mudbucker in the neck and just a volume and tone.
Mudbucker.
And the kind of the thing is that really the only person of interest who played a Gibson SG bass or EBO was Jack Bruce, and he played the old 69s with just the mudbucker.
Yeah.
And so that has made, that's the sound. If you want that sound, you want to sound like Jack Bruce, you want that really muddy sound. You don't want that modern pickup on the bridge. That's not why you buy an SG bass.
Yeah. Mm.
So I kind of feel like they're missing a bit of a trick there. The people, the purists who love Gibson bass, they're going to want an EBO. I mean, that's my opinion anyway. I'm sure that bridge pickup is very useful. Whenever I play one, I just shut it down and pretend it's not there. Just use that neck pickup. Much better.
Just close your eyes and like, it's not there.
Exactly. Anyway, I suppose briefly, as the theme of this podcast is, rather than being just the Custom Shop, it is supposed to be Dream Gear. We should mention, talk maybe briefly at least about Dream amplifiers, I guess the best amplifiers that we have, certainly that money can buy, that we have here in the shop.
I don't know. It's so weird because you get so tied up in like custom ordering guitars, and you can't really do the same thing with amps.
You can't.
But I know. I tend to have like one amp and then like stick with it.
No, you don't. You've got loads of amps.
No, I've got three.
Yeah, but you buy and sell amps like every 6 months.
No,
I'm
set now.
Yeah, we've heard
that's
that before.
That's rubbish. We've heard that
but
every time.
But I suppose thinking, if I could have anything on the shop floor right now, I would have the Pink Paisley Princeton, because it would perfectly match my Pink Paisley Strat.
It's not quite the same thing with amps. I guess with guitars, really, whilst obviously there are plenty of amazing, you know, mid-priced and even like cheap guitars that are incredible, and there are plenty of records out there that have been made on mid-priced or cheap guitars, but really with guitars, as you spend more money on them, you get a better guitar. Whereas with amps, it's more about, I guess, just liking a sound rather than it being good or bad. So things like that Princeton aren't especially.
Yeah, I mean, you don't speak to Fender and go, yeah, can you make me a Princeton, but can you like mod the clean channel for like slightly more reverb here? And then it's like, you know, it's just you buy a Princeton because you're like, yeah, it's a Princeton. Sounds good.
Yeah, but they look crazy, the new Princetons we've got.
Well, that Pink Paisley one is proper Paisley as well. It's the foil Paisley and then burst in the transparent silver.
So weird. Pink. So mad how they do it.
Yeah, it's great.
Who came up with that?
I have no
idea. Do you reckon someone was decorating and they just like
decorating the Fender workshop, and then they were like, oh, then someone sprayed some paint on it, and they were like, oh my god, this is incredible.
Such a weird, such a strange like concept. Oh, let's put some wallpaper and then lacquer it.
It was like the 70s. Was it the 70s or late 60s, I guess.
They were definitely like tripping.
Yeah, they were just like,
let's put some wallpaper on
this.
I mean, yeah, on the bass player front, Chris Squire was the ultimate player to do that on his Rickenbacker 4001, which he put, he covered in a paisley wallpaper. And then when sort of the late 70s, early 80s hit, he scraped it all off and over sanded it, so reduced the size of the body, and then painted it yellow because it was the 80s. It was coming up for the 80s, and
then in the 90s put a maple cap on it to bring it back up to the right size.
That's the best thing about Chris Squire's bass is he always played the same one, and so he's the bass player from Yes. So his bass has been through so many evolutions of whatever drugs were popular.
I suppose like 70s, you know, like 10, 60s, 70s, like Paisley, it's like, yeah, man, tripping and yeah, like blaring like cocaine yellow. Like, whoa! I need my guitar to be bright, like really bright.
He has a signature model, a signature Rickenbacker 4003.
Really?
That they make for him. Yeah, where the body is slightly shaved down. Because of course that's how he achieves his tone, just from when he accidentally sort of.
Do you reckon he was probably high on drugs at the time when he was sanding it? Just there, like...
definitely. Chris Squire is always high, which is why his signature model, which was released in the late 90s, obviously again he was making decisions when he wasn't in a completely sober state because it's finished. Bear in mind Chris Squire, who he is and who he plays for, and the fact that when his signature model came out, he was in his late 50s. It's like black with dark blue tribal patterns on it. On a Rickenbacker.
Well, isn't the Lemmy one tall leather?
A friend of mine who listens to the podcast, bass dabbler, a guy called JD Short, who lives in California, used to work for Rickenbacker, and he used to carve the Lemmy.
Wow.
That's amazing. For Rickenbacker. Yeah, which is pretty cool. So yeah, the Lemmy is the nutsest Rickenbacker.
Were they carved out of leather?
No, I think
of a whole cow. That's how Lemmy gets that tone.
That is how he gets his tone from pure cow. Pure cow tone. Anyway, gentlemen, I think we should move on to the question element of this podcast. And we will start with Cy. On the podcast group, which is facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group, Cy says,
anyone experienced the Ibanez LF7 or has any alternatives to suggest?
LF7.
Yes! The LF7.
The Ibanez Lo-Fi, the weirdest unit. Weren't we talking about these on Mark's last podcast? In the Tone Lock series?
Tone Lock. They were the pedals where you press the button
and they stay in. Yeah,
they
still sort of make the PM7. The Lo-Fi. Yeah, basically, I remember my mate bought one not long after he bought his Ibanez 7-string in, like, 2002 because I think Head or Monkey used one or Fieldy used one or they all used one.
There's on the one that I don't think I've ever seen one, and I'm looking at a picture of it now, and there's like a dip switch that lets you change between change the voicing depending on what
are the options.
You've got guitar,
right?
Yeah, okay, fine. Mic, sure. And drums. fact, so maybe your mate was into Dave Silveira.
Actually, I've got a feeling Jimmy, who works in the mail department, when he did his two-piece, used one of those on vocals because it does everything like this and it's really distorted all the time.
What? Makes you sound weird and northern. What
yeah.
That accent was quite impressive. Yeah, so but what does the pedal do? I know we did
explained that.
So it is like this. So because I thought by the name I thought it was like a bit crusher.
No.
Makes everything go like this.
Alright, so it's like a radio filter sort of thing.
And the only other thing that does it is the Strive and Timeline.
I might put
or the Mobius.
I might put your voice there through a radio filter so it actually genuinely sounds like the pedal sounds.
Yeah, I mean, that's all it did. It was like a producer's pedal, almost. A complete one-trick pony, but quite cool at the end of the day.
Okay, sweet. Will has also asked a question on the podcast group. I notice, incidentally, that over the printout of this question, I have a nice little note that says, error, timeout, offending command, timeout. So I can only read the latter part of this question.
Do you want to borrow my one?
If I could borrow a copy that hasn't been printed over the original, that would be great. Will says, what do you guys think of using an expression pedal with the Line 6M5? Is it worthwhile investment? Can I tweak any parameters with it? Pray tell, monsieur.
Yeah, you can control everything at once, all of the time.
That's impressive.
Yeah, so any parameters that show up on the little screen on the M5, you can control in one hit with the expression pedal, which is pretty amazing.
That is pretty grand. It really opens up the features of the M5.
Can you tweak? Can it? So you plug it in, and do you select which parameter?
Yeah, so it's really clever, actually, because so when you plug an expression pedal in and you, say, move the expression down to the heel.
Yeah.
And all the controls will automatically go down.
Okay.
Like all everything. The control, everything that's available will go down.
Yeah.
And actually, if you look at the little on-screen controls, there'll be a tiny little line, and that will show you where it was all the way up, so you know where the lowest point is and the highest point is, and then you can sweep between the two.
Right. Okay.
But some of them, if you don't want to move it, you just set it so it doesn't move.
Okay. Fine.
So you set it where it's heel up. Heel down or toe up, the line is in the same position. And you can, so on some controls, like some of the modulations where you've got five different controls, you can do everything at once, all the delays and stuff like that. It's a really cool unit.
There is no reason not to own an M5. I think it is definitely essential. I have an M5 which I have retired from my pedal board at the moment, but my band, we bring it around in our spares box with, you know, cables and power supplies and spare strings and stuff, because if any of our pedals on any of our boards go down, we can swap in the M5 because it does everything. Oh, yes!
That was
Thank you very much. Okay.
Were you worried that you were going
to
sneeze halfway through?
I had to rear back. I was quite impressed with that. So Scott recently put something up on our Facebook group asking for people's opinions on whether he should go for a Blues Junior, specifically the Emerald version, or whether he should get a classic vibe 50s Tele. He wanted to know where the bang for his buck lay.
I think that you have missed out a relatively vital, information here, which is the context of Scott's situation. He sort of expanded his point a little bit, which was saying he currently owns, I can't remember what the guitar was. It's a Duosonic, which we've got here. I think he's had it in setup.
Yeah, so he had a Duosonic, and he has one of the solid state Vox.
He's got a solid state Vox amp, and so I think that's actually a very important point. If you're asking where the bang for the buck is, it kind of depends on what it is that you currently have.
I agree.
And I think hands down, if you know, you should look to, you know, that Duosonic is a very, very cool guitar. It's a very cool guitar. On paper, it's probably not as good as the classic Vibe Tele, but I think that if he was looking for an improvement in his sound, he should be looking to upgrade the amp over getting the Tele. I mean, the Tele is obviously wicked as well, but I think that the going for the amp is certainly the place to go. You know, these things are always, they're always contextual.
I very agree. The Duosonic, I was struggling to remember what it was, and until you've just said, I think I know. It's a Mustang body shape.
It's a Mustang with two pickups. Yeah, that's right.
Gold anodized plate, and it comes in
Desert sand. Yeah, which is the only thing.
A gorgeous looking guitar.
Because the Duosonic
with an Emerald Blues Junior would be,
I think,
that'd
sound great.
Setup together.
I mean, the Duosonic is a very interesting guitar because it was, you know, the versatile version of the student guitar.
Yeah.
Because the original Music Master, I think Music Master.
Yeah.
Is that the first Mustang?
Yeah, that's right.
Which was the neck pickup, the single pickup which was in the neck, student line guitar, and then the Duosonic came out, and that had both pickups, and then I think the Mustang came out shortly afterwards, and that had all three. The Duosonic's great, like I think when you have both pickups selected, it just sounds, you know, just like such a raucous guitar. And yeah, I mean, obviously it's me talking, so of course I'm going to suggest buy a Blues Junior.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other thing was a classic 550s Teddy, which is
not far down my list of essentials.
No, but I think we all agree, yeah, that the Blues Junior is definitely the best choice, and absolutely the Emerald version of the Blues Junior is totally wicked. Fender have been very good at releasing limited edition versions of the Blues Junior over the last couple of years, and the Emerald one is one of the best. You know what speaker is in the Emerald version?
Eminence Patriot, I think, is in the...
What's that like?
They're a little... They're not as... A lot of the speakers I put in are less bright. They're a little bit more sort of mid-heavy and a bit more bassy, aren't they?
Mm.
What was the one that you really liked?
The Al Nico Blues. It was the blue one.
Yeah.
I really should have bought it, and I really regret not buying it.
Because we're still waiting for those tweed ones. We've got the tweed ones coming.
I can't wait for that. I might get one of those.
Every now and again, something comes through, and it's like, oh,
they're
a future
definitely a future collectible, because the original one run tweed ones are going for like the same money, if not more, than they were when they were new, which is like 450 quid.
Damn it. I didn't know that they were coming in. I'm definitely buying one. Okay, well, that actually concludes our questions for this week. Thank you very much, everyone, for contributing to the question side of the podcast. If you want us to answer your questions on the podcast group, then please pop them up there. It is facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. You can also get hold of us on our Facebook, on facebook.com/GAK music, or on Twitter at GAK_co_UK. If you want to get hold of me, you can on Twitter at Yosef_900. Mr. Matthew Knight, how can people get hold of you?
You can email me matt.knight@gak.co.uk for sure.
Keep going. You can do this. Come on.
A boy, I used to eat cinnamon. You can tweet me matt_90. That's Knight with SIE on the end. Or you can get me on the Facebook group.
J Cross.
Shoot me an email, j.cross@gak.co.uk. Or you can follow me on Twitter, JAYBM1. I'd like to point out that I was, just before we'd recorded this podcast, I happened to look, I got a notification to say that I had just been followed by @Neil_YoungLyrics. So apparently
you're going to be checking out Neil Young Lyrics.
Neil_YoungLyrics is really interested in finding out what I have to say.
What a weird surname.
Young Lyrics.
Okay, well, thank you very much for tuning in, everyone. Next week, we will be conducting our first ever Bandro special. So tune in for that one. Thanks very much, everyone.
Cheers.
Bye.
Well, that's that.
You haven't stopped recording?
No, I know. That's because I definitely need footage.
What, for some sort of...
For the after bit. I think we were quite on the ball.
The aftermath. How long was that one? It wasn't very long, was it?
No, it wasn't very long. But you guys looked like you were falling asleep.